Synergy loves company.
We have this coterie of rich franchises, the company now, that people want to engage with.
I came here to try and continue what Walt Disney and his associates set in motion 50 years ago, which is to experiment with every new and innovative kind of entertainment possible.
It's what they hope to do here, to really develop something that well, just more than an entertainment enterprise. It's something that contributes many other ways.
Hey, this is Synergy Loves Company, where Disney connects with everything. I'm Eric Hathorn, and keeping me company today is Andrew Jagoda from the Rare Cuts Media Society, and we're going to talk about Aerosmith and Disney and everywhere where they've connected in the past, all sorts of fun stuff like that. So, Andrew.
Hello.
Here we are. Yes, hello. I got to start with these couple of questions here. The first one is... What's your relationship? I like to call it a relationship. What's your relationship with Disney? What are you a Disney fan? What kind of Disney things are you into? Full company, anything under the umbrella? Let us know.
Well, these days it's all about Star Wars for me. Of course, you know that it didn't start there because I'm, you know, I grew up in the 90s, so of course I had the whole Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid phase.
Of course.
And, you know, and you couldn't escape it in the 90s. So, of course, it started there. But,
right.
But now that they own Star Wars and they own Marvel, I mean, there's just no escaping Disney for me.
It's everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. So that's really where my focus is these days, is remembering, trying to keep in my head the timeline of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And at the same time, up to date on everything Star Wars.
And there's a lot there.
Yes.
With the, especially with the big new Galactic Star Cruiser, love it or hate it, that's docking soon.
I don't have that kind of money.
Right? Also, that would be a different episode, because we are talking about Aerosmith here.
Yes.
And I want to know the next question then. So you told me about your Disney relationship. What about Aerosmith? Tell me a little bit about your Aerosmith fandom.
So Aerosmith and I go back to my high school days, when every day driving in and from school, I had either Paul McCartney, Billy Joel, or Aerosmith on. And Aerosmith was most mornings because I needed to get the blood pumping. So,
right.
So that was my big dive in to Aerosmith. And I've always loved the album Permanent Vacation. I even had it framed on the wall in my parents' basement when I was younger. So
awesome. Yeah. The Aerosmith too. I feel like we have a similar feel on Aerosmith, where I really got into them kind of similarly around that time. Mm-hmm. And just their music was always kind of, they, like you said, it gets your blood pumping. It gets you going. I always, my family makes fun of me because I love how Steven Tyler doesn't always enunciate or sing actual words. He just does that. Exactly. Because I don't know the words to any songs. So that's kind of how I sing songs. So it works. It works perfectly. But no, I love that. And I'm glad we got, you know, both of us fans here. We're gonna be able to dive deep in with that. I like that you said Permanent Vacation too, because that's one of those kind of Aerosmith Renaissance albums that I think we're going to get into and start talking about. So that's pretty cool. In fact, let's get into Aerosmith's history for a little bit right here, right now. So they started in the early 70s, and like Steven Tyler was kind of in some bands that were somewhat successful, but he met up with Joe Perry, and those two are like those are the kind of iconic back-to-back Toxic Twins Aerosmith duo there. And so they started the band. They started to pick up some steam throughout the 70s. They were pretty big. That's where we get some of those big early hits like Walk This Way, before Run DMC touched it, of course. And then Sweet Emotion, those kind of things from that big album, Toys in the Attic. A lot of other good things happening. But then right at the end of the 70s, early 80s, they kind of fell apart. And then it took some rehab and some kind of rough times to kind of flush out, you know, to get started anew and kind of get a new following, a new kind of revitalization. And that's where like that Permanent Vacation album you were talking about kind of comes in at that point in their career. And I got to draw the parallel. Of course, this is the Disney show, in that the Disney company kind of faltered a little bit after Walt left. And it kind of took some like shakeups and new people like Michael Eisner in the 80s to kind of get things back on a growth track. And Aerosmith kind of gets a character like this in David Geffen from Geffen Records. They're on Geffen Records. Permanent Vacation was one of the, it was like the second one. I got to ask, they had an album with David Geffen before that, Done with Mirrors. Are you a fan of that one?
No.
I agree with you. I'm not a fan of that one.
I own it. I've listened to it more than once, but it's been a very long time.
Yeah, it's okay. But Permanent Vacation picks that up. And I got to talk about David Geffen. I've mentioned his name so many times, but he's the G in DreamWorks SKG in the 90s when DreamWorks comes online. And Jeffrey Katzenberg from the Disney company, who is in charge of animation, is the K in DreamWorks SKG. Spielberg is the S, just to fill it out, because I couldn't not fill it out. But Jeffrey Katz, if you read the book Disney War, which is, you know, one of the best, like if you want to get into inside baseball for Disney, Disney War is a good one. But David Geffen is kind of like he's in Jeffrey Katzenberg's ear all the time, telling him like, you know, you deserve more than what Disney and Michael Eisner are giving you. And I kind of feel like he leads him away from Disney in a way. Like if I'm going to take that, I'll just take this stance on it. He leads him to the dark side of of the movie business and pulls him out of Disney. Although I don't think he would have had some like a good run at it there. But David Geffen, that same guy who leads Jeffrey Katzenberg away from Disney in the 90s, is the same guy who revitalizes Aerosmith. And of course, one of the things he does to revitalize Aerosmith is, well, other than kind of focusing on producing their music really well, getting them good producers and getting songwriters to work with them, it's music videos.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in the early 90s, Aerosmith were, well, late 80s, early 90s, Aerosmith were like kings on MTV. They had all these great music videos. And of course, we've talked a lot about Aerosmith. I talked a little about Disney. But of course, we can't talk about Aerosmith without talking about these music videos, and we'll sprinkle in some Disney along the way. So the first one up that I want to talk about is Janie's Got a Gun, 1989.
Janie's Got a Gun to me is like, it came first. So I'm not this, when I say this, I mean it in reverse, but it's Meat Loaf's I'd Do Anything for Love. You watch that video, those two videos together, and it's like, who came up with this? The same guy? And it's not the same guy. Yeah, it's Meatloaf took all of the things that Janie's Got a Gun, the music video did, and just kind of said, okay, well, I'm going to take Beauty and the Beast and mix it with the music video from Janie's Got a Gun. Because, I mean, you've got shattering glass all over. You've got the cops with flashlights that look like searchlights. I mean, you everything's blue or black, you know, it's just, it's so dark. And you've got, of course, the woman that's running all the time. The only thing that I don't think he took was the whole like traffic copter thing. That's
right.
Aerosmith didn't use a traffic copter.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like watching two of the same thing, you know.
That's a good point. I had thought about that, but there was that feel of that kind of, you know, big music video. It has that like dark, but like I said, like the moonlight through the window kind of feel, where it's like bright but dark, and it's got that kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Which we can say David Fincher was the director of that, and he went on to do movies like Fight Club and Seven. I know not Disney, but I didn't realize this until I was reading a little bit about him. He got his start at Lucasfilm in ILM on Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is him. You know, he got started. He got started in Lucasfilm. This is his interim before coming a big fancy director as he does later in the 90s, which was pretty cool.
And this is, it doesn't actually connect because, of course, this music video was way before the TV show. But
yeah,
when all of the stuff is breaking in the video, then she's on the floor arranging pieces to spell out the word lost.
Oh,
so, you know, you got that connection there for Disney.
Yes. Buena Vista Television here. Yeah. We'll put a pin in that because Lost is coming back in one of these videos. I think you could feel that coming, right? Lost.
Yep.
We'll play the sound and have the word kind of come in here. You could hear it in your head that it's not even a song, but it's like the rusty gate sound of the beginning of the show. Exactly. So there's two other actors in here that have some Disney connection. One slight Disney connection, but people probably know him from some other place. But Nicholas Guest has done some minor voiceover work for Disney, but he's probably more popular for something else. Are you a Christmas Vacation fan?
Oh, yes.
I know. It's a non-Disney tangent, but of course he's Todd in in Christmas Vacation.
Todd Chester.
Todd Chester. I didn't know they had last names in that.
Yep.
Of course,
they don't say it why in the movie, but yeah.
Well, yeah. They do say, why is the floor all wet, Todd?
Yeah, I don't know, Margo.
Exactly. That's the fun line there. So he did do some like minor voiceover work for Disney. He does a lot of voiceovers more recently, and he was did some voices in Frozen and Big Hero 6. In both of them, he's additional voices, but because he's Todd, I had to bring him up. And then we've got Leslie Ann Warren. She got her start, her very first movie was The Happiest Millionaire, which was a Disney movie from the 60s. It was one of the last ones that Walt Disney worked on. And then she went on to be in another one with Disney, which was the one and only Genuine Family Band. So they're those good old, like, lighthearted, late 60s kind of Disney movies that the whole family could get around. That's how she got her start. And she plays the mom in the video. So that's kind of a couple of interesting ones. And that's, of course, the kind of darkest Aerosmith video. You're talking like the Meatloaf feel there. And that one kind of, that comes from the Pump album, and it kind of feels dark. And then they kind of get more lighthearted in the 90s with a trilogy of fantastic videos. Of course, there's other videos along the way, but these ones we definitely have to talk about. Mm-hmm. And we get Crying, Amazing, and Crazy, all three in a row, that have Alicia Silverstone in them, which, Andrew, we were talking before we started recording, she is maybe one of the only people who hasn't done anything with Disney, anything at least. She hasn't tried to work with Disney, we'll say.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's tried, but they don't let her. I don't know.
I will say, you know, maybe Disney was playing it safe in that aspect, because I mean, she was known as the Aerosmith girl at 16 years old because of these videos.
Right. And then Clueless was her big one then. But you said, she was a music video girl.
And she's presented as essentially jailbait. So I don't think Disney really wants to that image.
Right?
Or at least they didn't at that time.
At the time. Maybe now if they're going for some weird Hulu exclusive thing, who knows?
And that's no offense to Alicia Silverstone, because, you know, wonderful actress. I didn't mean to knock her in any way, but.
No, definitely not.
At the same time, those Aerosmith videos for kids that grew up in the 90s, wow.
Right? They were kind of iconic at the time, and very, like you said, it was definitely not the Disney image that they had at that point in time. But we do get some other stars. So even if they somehow Aerosmith blacklisted her, Not that we know that for sure. We do get some other stars who show up in these videos. So in Cryin', we do actually get our lost... I felt you saying this. Just, do you want to tell us what the lost connection is here?
We get our lovely friend Sawyer, a.k.a. Josh Holloway.
Exactly.
As the purse snatcher. His first claim to fame. Stealing Alicia Silverstone's purse. She had
to chase him down the street at the end. Yeah. And then he went to become Sawyer and Lost,
basically he's the purse snatcher of Lost.
Right? So ever since this Aerosmith video, he's been typecasted as a petty criminal.
Yeah, pretty much.
There was his audition tape. He just brought this video in and Lost was, you're hired. No. So then we also get Steven Dorff in Cryin, and he's not, I have to point this out because I do have a love for these bad, cheesy, made-for-TV Disney movies. I don't know if I should call them bad because I do love them, but some of them are really bad. And he was in a remake of The Absent-Minded Professor. He was younger. He's a kid in the movie. He wasn't like a main starring role. I will say in this version from 1988, the absent-minded professor himself is Harry Anderson from Night Court.
Gotta love Night Court.
Right? So it's totally 80s. It's a great kind of, you know, people who are like, oh, Disney's just remaking the same movies over and over again. Well, guess what? In 1988, they were remaking the same movies over and over again, just putting them on TV. And then, of course, Steven Dorff goes on to, he was in some Touchstone movies, too, in the 90s. And he went to be in, like, a bunch of things in TV and movies and stuff. Just never, like, a big, big star, but kind of always around. All right. So Amazing is a weird video. It's kind of the second one in the trilogy because it is a, like, there's, like, a computer. And there's like flashbacks to watching the Cryin' video.
Yeah, so you get your sequel to the Cryin' video.
Right? With the good old
sequel. I'm assuming it's supposed to be like an enhanced Aerosmith CD that he pops in.
The good old enhanced CD features.
Which somehow has virtual reality.
Right? The virtual reality technology of this is quite impressive for 1993.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and he's got, and it's just like, he's not like in a special facility, right? He's just like at his computer.
Yeah.
With his, because, you know, in 1993, we all had our virtual reality sets at our computer.
Yeah. It's a very, very strange choice, but at the same time, it was the early 90s.
Right, and it was cool. They spent so much on that cool VR gear that they had to use clips from the old video to fill the thing out. No.
And
I mean, there's some new clips in there.
Yeah, yeah. And they have what is essentially like a, I don't know, almost like a tunnel in a warehouse or something.
Yeah.
And that they, yes, that they decide to trash for whatever reason.
Because they could, yes, and they had the money to do it. So,
but the best part is the fact that then at the end, it turns out that it's not him watching Alicia Silverstone. It's Alicia Silverstone watching him watch Alicia Silverstone.
the old twist. I'm not sure, but M. Night Shyamalan might have had, no.
Yeah, yeah. It's
he might have had career, something to do with this one. No, it had that good old twist at the end. Oh man, no, that is true. That is a little like a little icing on the 90s music video cake right there.
Yeah, and it was really funny getting ready for this podcast,
yeah,
and reading about it, because if you read about the video, everybody's like, oh, this dichotomy between the new technology and then the old with the biplane. And I'm like, no, they just rented a biplane. They weren't trying to go for that. it's not some big conversation. They weren't like trying to say, oh, well, you know, is technology worth it or should we go back to biplanes?
It's like putting the meaning where the meaning is not.
Yeah.
They're just kind of adding, adding. So I don't think Aerosmith thought that deeply into it when they were, you know,
renting a tunnel. It is,
yeah. It is amazing though. I got to throw that out there. Not just the song title. The
jokes like that, and I might be crying.
Oh, man. Callback right there. No. Oh, yikes. So the guy in the video, I got to point out, is Jason London of 90s fun fame. He's in one of these. He's in one of these Disney remake made-for-TV movies, too. In 1995, he's in a remake of The Barefoot Executive. Which was originally a Kurt Russell part, and he redoes this. At this point, I think this one airs on ABC TV, where the other one was on the Disney Channel. So this one, you know, getting prime time here, and he gets to be the, you know, more starring role in that one as the, you know, as the Kurt Russell character in that. And then he goes and he's in a snowboarding movie from Touchstone called Out Cold. I haven't seen that one though, but I kind of dug down in the vault to find some more Disney stuff from him. I mean, he was in that one, but no, I tell you, when people say Disney just keeps remaking movies, they haven't not remade movies. It's always been since, you know, the 80s and 90s, they were doing it back then too.
And he also, not a Disney connection, but he was also in Dazed and Confused, which has a bunch of Aerosmith references, so you know he's got that going for him too.
He's the Aerosmith guy. Yeah. He's just the Aerosmith guy. And then so to round out our Aerosmith music video trilogy here, we have Liv Tyler in Crazy. We actually have Steven Tyler's daughter in a kind of a weird, creepy take, if you think about it. Starring as the, you know, young girl in his video, like a video girl with Alicia Silverstone. It's weird. I'm just going to say it.
I mean, in a way, you could think of this trilogy as like a Peeping Tom trilogy.
Oh, definitely. Because,
I mean, you go from it being like, okay, Alicia Silverstone, she's only 16. Should she really be, you know, this sexualized? To then you've got Amazing, where the guy is literally trying to peep on her with VR.
With the VR.
And then you've got this, where it's like, okay, and now Steven Tyler's daughter is getting into the mix with her, and they're doing a striptease contest.
Yikes. It's like, hey, my daughter. They have a very weird relationship. I'm pretty sure I heard a story a while back that she didn't know he was her dad for a long time. And I think she even believed Todd Rundgren was her dad. And then they, like, when she was much older, she found out that Steven Tyler was her dad, kind of situation, which is, and then he goes and puts her in the video as like the, hey, look at this hot girl situation. It's yikes. It's very, very cringy, but she's there. He gets her some work. In that, and she is, of course, in Armageddon, which I think if Steven Tyler got her some work in Crazy, I'm pretty sure she got him the work in Armageddon. I think that it was like, you know, I'll get you a job to get you started. And then she's like, well, then I'll get you a job where you could get,
you can finally have a number one hit. And,
exactly. Oh, let's talk about that, because let's get into to Armageddon here. And like when you're talking Armageddon and Aerosmith, you have to talk about Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's their only number one hit.
Yeah.
And it's at this point, they're like over 20 years into their career.
Yeah.
And they get their first number one hit and they didn't even write it. It's a Diane Warren song, and I kind of feel like, because she's had so many number one hit songs that she's written, like anything she writes, she's just like, I wrote this song, it's going to be a number one hit. And she's like, here you go, Aerosmith, number one hit. What do you think about the song? As an Aerosmith fan, as just a general fan of music, what do you, yeah.
To me, it's a wonderful song. I don't mean to knock it. Obviously, it's commercially successful. But yeah. It's not the ultimate Aerosmith song.
It's not.
And yeah. I mean, to me, honestly, a much better song which we've already talked about, is Kryon. To me, Kryon is the one that, if you're going to say, okay, give me one song from Aerosmith and listen to it, I'm not going to give you it. I don't want to miss a thing. I'm going to give you Kryon probably 8 times out of 10, because it starts off a little slow, which I don't want to miss a thing is, you know, slow the whole time, basically.
It's a ballad, yeah.
It's slow. They use it in slow dances now and have for, well, now we're going on 20-some years.
Exactly,
in slow dances. But Kryon, it starts out slow, but then it becomes just like, it does everything that Aerosmith, like, ever does in their songs.
It, like, brings you through all the Aerosmith emotions.
Yeah, I especially have to say Kramer's drums on it. Like, he beats the hell out of those things in that song.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love it so much. So it's funny to kind of have to go from talking about the music video, which is like, to the fact that I just adore that song. And then to have to kind of compare it to, you know, the one that everybody officially recognizes as the best Aerosmith song.
Statistically,
commercially, yes. Statistically, critics, yes. Whatever. But to me, it's like, okay, you took all of the stuff that Kryon and you know, Permanent Vacation, Pump, those albums did really well, and you took it away. You still get Steven Tyler with the super loud screaming vocals. But everything else, it's like, okay, now we're going to give you violins, we're going to give you orchestra sound, and we're going to make it slow. Like, it just completely baffles me that that's the number one that they got.
It's not an Aerosmith song at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's them playing a song, sure. Like, they're the ones playing the music. They, like, you know, Diane Warren wrote it, but it's not. It doesn't feel like there's. And I think one of those things that you're, like, describing is, like, the bluesiness of Aerosmith mm-hmm. is totally stripped out of that song.
Exactly.
I mean, the guitars are there. Like you said, the screaming's there. It's just not an Aerosmith song. It's a good song.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's not the, like you said, it's not the one that the Aerosmith fan would tell you, like, that we wouldn't tell you to go listen to that to get a good sense of who Aerosmith is.
Right.
But, yeah, so it becomes, like, the biggest song. Now, that's not to say those ones that we talked about the videos for were hits in their own right, but they just didn't hit that number one spot.
Right.
Only this one, Don't Want to Miss a Thing, hits that big old spot there. So, Don't Want to Miss a Thing. We get Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Let's go talk the soundtrack a little bit before we go and talk the movie. There's some other songs. I gotta tell you, when I got into Aerosmith, which is kind of weird because I don't want to say Don't Want to Miss a Thing is the song that got me into Aerosmith, but the Armageddon soundtrack was one of the first, like, Aerosmith releases that I owned. And it was never really Don't Want to Miss a Thing that made me want like, I wasn't like, oh, Don't Want to Miss a Thing is my favorite song. I think I had an awareness of Aerosmith, but then when I got the Armageddon soundtrack, it was more the other tracks on there that kind of led me to them. So maybe I did buy it for Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Let's go ahead and say I did. I don't know if I did. I feel like I didn't, but that could be Aerosmith fan hindsight, knowing that that's not really who they are. But there are some other songs on there. It's kind of like a mini Aerosmith album. And we've got that. There's the song, What Kind of Love Are You On? Which had some little chart play. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah. I will say I never owned the Armageddon soundtrack. So for me, it was, I don't think I really got big on Aerosmith until after that.
It had its wave.
After the Armageddon wave, you know, the
right.
Bruce Willis and the Ben Affleck.
Of course. <Yeah. laughs> That big old asteroid that they gotta go do some offshore drilling on.
Which I'm pretty sure I saw the movie when it came out.
Yeah.
But to me it wasn't like, you know, oh, that song. It was more like, oh, all right, Bruce Willis is dead.
Right. Spoiler alert.
No, well, sorry. If you haven't seen the movie by now, you probably won't ever see it.
Just kidding. 20 some years afterwards. Yeah. No. But yeah, no, they have What Kind of Love Are You On? What Kind of Love Are You On is the only other song that's like a new song. Mm-hmm. And it really, in my opinion, sounds like it was a reject from like Nine Lives, which came out a little bit before, and it didn't quite fit. I can't even remember where it comes in during the movie. It's a decent, it sounds a little bit more late 90s Aerosmith than Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Yeah.
But I would go ahead and say, even though it's not an Aerosmith song, I probably personally prefer Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It's okay. What Kind of Love Are You On? There's some like weird stuff that Steven Tyler does, like that we know he does. Like he does like a little thing where he does like a Jack and Jill Went Up the Hill thing that gets inappropriate. And it's just like, okay, Steven Tyler is Steven Tyler. Yikes. Oh, Steven Tyler. But then you get Sweet Emotion is on there. Come Together is on there, which are, you know, going back to that good old 70s Aerosmith kind of the vibe. And the whole soundtrack, I think, has a good kind of 70s vibe. There's Journey is on it, has a track. It's a newer track. ZZ Top is on it. Bob Seger has a track on it. So I don't know if they wanted the 70s feel. And then when, like, 70s rock feel, and then went, you know, oh, does anyone know any 70s, like, rock and roll stars? And, like, Liv Tyler sitting in the corner there on the cast, and they're just, you know, or if they were like, hey, let's cast Liv Tyler, and then we could get her dad, or if, like, Aerosmith inserted themselves, I don't know, but it seems like nepotism somewhere, somehow. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of weird, too, that they include the Beatles cover that Aerosmith does as one of the tracks.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
It's, I mean, of all the things that they've covered in their days, that was, I mean, I guess since it's a big blockbuster movie, if you're going to have them cover something, you want it to be a band that everybody's going to know. But
right. So Come Together is like, it's going to be a song that's kind of recognized.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they could, if they wanted the Beatles version of Come Together, I don't know that they could have done it, because Steven Tyler would have been like, you know, guys, we have a version of that song too. we could put that one on here. No.
You know, just give me 5 minutes. I'll re-record it for you.
Right. You need a new, I could do that. We could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then there's one more song that I have to, I don't even know if I should call it a song, but the Armageddon soundtrack ends with a song called Animal Crackers.
Yes.
And it's billed as being by Steven Tyler. I mean, I think it mentions Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck too, but it's Steven Tyler singing Don't Want to Miss a Thing's chorus, but not to the song Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It's different music from the movie. And then they just play some dialogue that is about
Animal Crackers.
Animal Crackers. I remember, like, when I had the CD back in the day and I enjoyed listening to the album, like, if I got that far to that song, I like felt embarrassed for the album that was on there. I was like, this should not be a song. It's
no,
it's pretty bad. I don't think it needed it.
No, it didn't need it. They could have just done him playing the piano and, or whoever's playing the piano, I don't even know, and doing that singing and just had it be like 35 seconds long or whatever.
They didn't, like, a little reprise thing.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't need to have, if they really wanted that extra track, then they really didn't need to have Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck talking about the animal kingdom in cracker form.
Right. And whether or not they're actually crackers.
Yeah.
I don't think it counts as a song.
No.
It's a sad excuse for a song, in my opinion. But it's really a hodgepodge. It's like, you know, they pulled the singing from the one song through some, you know, other score music under it, and then had the... Now, if I'm not mistaken, though, I think in the movie, they just kind of lifted that scene out. Mm-hmm. Like the audio from the scene. I'm trying to remember if you hear Steven Tyler singing before that scene happens. I haven't seen Armageddon in a while.
Yeah, I might have to
go back and revisit it. I've seen it plenty of times, I will say.
Oh yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's got that good action movie energy. So being that it's a Touchstone, it's like, it's got that Disney vibe. Even the Touchstone ones have that Disney vibe where it's like heartfelt. I laughed, I cried, even though there was action kind of thing going on there. But like, I should say it's the most Disney of the Touchstone action films. Cause I was going to say it was directed by Michael Bay, good old action director Michael Bay, who worked with Disney on The Rock and Pearl Harbor, which were also those, you know, Touchstone Hollywood Pictures kind of not Disney label, but other one, but Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Good old Michael Bay. Who else would make a movie about a meteor flying towards Earth?
And make it with all the orangeness that is the movie.
Right?
Almost every scene is orange.
You need the fire and the flames and the orangeness everywhere. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But yeah, so Michael Bay. Oh, Jerry Bruckheimer, too. Of course, Jerry Bruckheimer, he goes on to do the Pirates movies with Disney. So he stays in the fold. And then this is a weird one I came across. Good old J.J. Abrams. Here's another lost one.
There you go.
Did like a script treatment of Armageddon. Hmm. So he gets a writing credit on it because he did one of the script treatments along the way. And then, of course, Lost, and then all the stuff you did with Star Wars and all of that, like, you know, with Disney. So maybe you pointed back in Janie's Got a Gun, she's putting the letters Lost on there. Maybe J.J. Abrams was playing the long game with Disney when he saw that, and it was like, Disney plus me plus Aerosmith, I'm going to secretly underground engineer this thing into being my career with Disney. No.
Or maybe he watched that music video and said, I like this. They use the word lost. Hey,
right?
That's a good word.
All right. So movies aside, movies about asteroids hurling towards Earth and the 70s rock and roll that goes along with them and animal crackers. That relationship with Disney and Aerosmith kind of pays off for them in the sense that they later then become the only rock band that I know of who has had a roller coaster for the past 20 some years, which is pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
We get that good old Disney synergy machine going where we have this band who did the music from our movie and it was really popular. And now we're going to fold them into the parks. So we get to talk about the parks. And the Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yes.
Are you a Rock and Roller Coaster fan?
I am. That's my favorite. That's my favorite roller coaster.
Nice. Then I'm glad we get to talk about it.
And it's not just because of the music, but the theming behind it. I mean, you start out and it looks like, you know, the classic Sunset Boulevard, Hollywood kind of studio. And then you go... Yeah, and you get this whole 50s vibe that then there's all this chrome everywhere when you first go in. So you get more of that 50s kind of rock vibe. And then you get the whole idea of like the limos taking you to the concert. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. That's corny as can be. But
oh yeah.
But at the same time, it actually gives you some kind of reason to get on a roller coaster ride as opposed to just being like, okay, we're going to stand in line and just, we know that we're going to get on a ride. It actually has like a flimsy plot, but it has a plot.
Yeah. It does a decent job of telling the story that it's going to tell.
Yeah. And the fact that you get that video with the band kind of setting it up. So it's not just like getting on a regular roller coaster, it actually has that plot. I mean, that was smart.
Are you trying to tell me that's a video? I thought Aerosmith.
they fly in every morning. There. Stand there from sun up till sundown.
And then at night they record new music, right? Yeah. That's what I thought was happening.
In that same studio where the ride is.
Exactly. That's what they're in the studio. And the guy goes and he gets Joe Perry's guitar.
Yeah.
He comes in there and gets it and brings it to him. No. No, it is a great pre-show. And like you said, it is kind of corny. But it does get you in a good vibe, a good mood for it. And I do remember the first time riding it, walking from the studio into that like alley parking garage area and just being kind of like, whoa, this is cool. Like it just has a cool vibe throughout.
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're in a new place.
Yeah. And as always too, I mean, you get the added bonus of Disney going kind of over the top. I read there's over 900 speakers on the ride.
Just cuz.
And I
just
mean, cuz. Are you going to get that anywhere else than Disney? No.
No. No, that's the stuff that makes it. And then like, yeah, you have your personal speakers in the in the roller coaster as part of that ungodly number of speakers. You get those ones right by your ear, which I think makes for an awesome I mean, that's the best way to incorporate a band into an attraction like this, that, you know, you're going to do a roller coaster. Of course, you're not going to be able to see Aerosmith the whole time that you're on the actual, you know, ride. Yeah. You get to hear them. So I got to ask you a question. There's five limos that I want to go through that have these fun names. I think there is an alternate limo too that'll come out, but these are the five that have these fun names, and they each have their own soundtrack. I didn't realize this. I knew it was random, like what music you got, but each limo has its own soundtrack. So I'm going to go through and tell you what the soundtracks are. I'm also going to tell you the fun license plate names of each of these, and you tell me which one you think you would pick.
Okay.
So we got the first one is 1QK limo, so one quick limo, and that one plays 9 lives. Just 9 lives.
Mm, no.
We've got the next one is You Go, like the letter U, G-O, Babe, You Go, Babe, and that one plays Love in an Elevator and Walk This Way.
Mm, maybe that one.
Maybe. Then we got, I'm interested in how short they play these songs. We've got one that's Bye-bye, B-U-H-B-Y-E, license plate. And we've got Young Lust, Fine, F-I-N-E, from Pump. And then Love in a Roller Coaster, re-recorded for the ride.
Hmm.
Not Love in an Elevator, Roller Coaster. Hmm. That one has 3 songs. We got one that has 9 lives. And then one that has 3 sides. It's kind of interesting how they cut it.
Yeah,
we still got more options, though. We've got H8TRFFC, because I hate traffic.
Yeah, of course.
And that one's got Back in the Saddle and Dude Looks Like a Lady. And then we got number two, Fast. Number 4, letter U. So Too Fast for You. And that one plays Sweet Emotion Live, is featured on their A Little South of Sanity album, which I think came out just a little bit before the ride went online.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those seemed like the most ideal ride for you?
I would probably have to go with Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Nice. So that's that you hate traffic.
Yeah.
And you got Back in the Saddle and Dude Looks Like a Lady. Nice. That's a good choice. See, my brain immediately went to, I would go on the Bye-bye one because there's 3 songs.
I mean, that's good quality. Right,
right? I want to get the most bang for my buck there.
That would probably be my second pick.
There you go.
Dude Looks Like a Lady. Because of loving Permanent Vacation, the album.
Right. That might have been the only Permanent Vacation track, as I'm looking through this, that is on one of these.
I think so.
They do a good job of having some older stuff, even if it's re-recorded older stuff, versus having newer stuff exclusively. The one that I would not want to ride is the one that only plays 9 lives. Don't get me wrong. I like the album. It was fine.
Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah. I think if you were going to go with having a car that just plays one song, maybe something like Draw the Line.
Right.
Like Line Up, you know?
So that, oh, that's true. That's, it's, yeah, Nine Lives, I think they're just trying to promote the time it came out.
Probably. Yeah.
Trying to promote their most recent album. That would be my guess as to why Nine Lives gets its own, mm-hmm. its own limo. Because that's a little strange. But
I mean, yeah. I guess Line Up is too much of a, like, a reminder that you were just in line for a half hour.
Yeah, they're like, no, we can't say anything that has line in it. Draw the Line. No, nope, Line Up. We're not doing any of those songs because we don't want people to remember the line. Oh, no. That is a very good point. Oh, man. So this is an extreme Disney attraction in that I think it is the only one in Florida. I can't say the U.S. because we got the Incredicoaster, but it's the only one in Florida that goes upside down. I'm trying to, there's nothing other Disney-wise that goes upside down. Of course, there's other coasters in Florida that go upside down, but on Disney property in Florida, this is the only one that does it. And of course, you're launched with the good old countdown, the Steven Tyler shouting in your ear countdown.
Yeah.
When he's just, and then you just go.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that for me too, the reason I say it's my favorite roller coaster, it's not really so much that it's because of Aerosmith. It's because of how they do. It's just like pitch black and you have no idea where you're going. So everything's a surprise. You're not like looking, going, oh, wait, we're going to go. Oh, here it comes. No, you have no idea. So I love that. So when my wife makes fun of me for this, because anytime we go on any roller coaster, no matter whether it's scary as can be, or just simple as can be, I never have like this scared look on my face. I always have this grin, like I'm just laughing my head off. So she always says you must be psychotic because you're never even, you know, you go on the drop at Splash Mountain or whatever. I don't yeah. change expressions. I just look like I'm laughing like the Joker from Batman. So the fact that with the Aerosmith one, I have no idea what's coming. Like it just perfectly fits with my personality because you could nice. Drop me from a building and I'd just be like, ha.
I love it. Oh man. No, it does have that good. It will. And you talking about the face that you're always just smiling, those on-ride photos, that one comes right away mm-hmm. at the launch. You get that. And to have that, that's impressive. If you have that smile at that launch, because usually that's like where
that's when everybody else is screaming their heads off.
Right? Your face is getting pulled back. And that's crazy. I do have to tell this one story that I heard a while back about. I always think about it when I think of the Rock and Roller Coaster, because there was a guy a few years back who lost his magic band right at the launch of the Rock and Roller Coaster. And it fell in a place that every time a limo took off on the track, it registered him, because his magic band was there, as being on the ride. So he got like thousands of on-ride photos of random people all day from the Rock and Roller Coaster. His phone must have been blowing up, just like, ding, ding, here's your picture. And it's just some randos on That's I know like it's like you got to be like is it on there, because I don't want that happening to me. But no, that just cracks me up, and I can't not think of the launch sequence here without thinking of that.
that reminds me, it's not Aerosmith, but it reminds me of my brother-in-law lost his band on the drop when you're on Pirates of the Caribbean, and the camera's right there. So it didn't ping him all day, even though he lost it right at the camera. So that would have been hilarious if that had happened.
That one floated down, maybe.
Yeah.
Floated downstream.
Floated downstream to the redhead or whatever.
Right? It's just bobbing up in the water down there. Nice. Well, yeah, good thing it didn't land like off on the side right by the camera, because then he would have been that story of the guy getting his magic band picked up for every rando all day. Oh, man. So there was another version of the Rock and Roller Coaster in France. I've never been to France to ride it before it got ripped up for their version of Avengers Campus, but they had a little bit of a different spin on it. And I know we talked at the beginning about how we like the Florida version, but in Paris, it was kind of like we're doing this experimental technology that you're going to go on this this ride with the music, and it's going to enhance your experience. They like kind of took it from that angle, and like Aerosmith was part of it. It's this new music experience kind of technology. I don't know. Do you think that helps the story? Or do you think they should? Maybe I didn't sell it good enough. Maybe I did that on purpose.
I think that probably when it came out, yes, because the 90s expanding technology, you know, we were willing to sit there and watch a teenager watch Alicia Silverstone, who's watching him.
So right?
I think that even probably 5 years after it came out, it was probably looking dated because of that. More dated than the Florida one.
Yeah, it probably dated itself. Well, I mean, it would have been like the late 90s, early 2000s that both of these came out. And when you think of like the dot-com boom and bust, and, you know, everything was like, ooh, so techie at the turn of the century. I'm going to call it the turn of the century, because now that we're in the 20s, it's like the turn of the century. But at the turn of the 21st century, I feel like we were like, ooh, high-tech Y2K, the technology is new and scary. And it's quickly turned normal.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that going, like you said, it might have helped sell it at the beginning, but then it dated very quickly. And now, of course, it's gone, because Paris is getting their version of Avengers Campus. And they needed the space.
Which, if you think about it, the Avengers Campus idea is that same thing of, let's show off all this techie stuff.
That at the Disney is a park. Very good point. You know, that's, I didn't make that connection before.
It's just an updated one with, you know, tech that sort of sometimes exists and sometimes is just Iron Man making stuff up.
You know? Right, right. Yeah, between Iron Man and Wakanda, it's somebody's tech or it's not.
Yeah, somebody's making it up.
Right. Oh, man. No, that's a good point. I didn't think of that connection, that it would be Avengers Campus. Maybe Avengers Campus is just staying true to the original Paris Rock and Roller Coaster.
Maybe they should have, this is what they should have done. They should have kept it, had the Iron Man stuff next to it, and then rethemed it to AC/DC because of the Iron Man movies.
Oh, yes. Was that Iron Man 2?
That was,
I want to say, or 3?
All of them, I think. They did it.
There was one that had a really big like marketing push with AC/DC. But yeah, AC/DC with the Rock and Roller Coaster featuring AC/DC a la Iron Man. That would have been, that's about as long as the name would have been too. No. All right. So yeah, our Rock and Roller Coaster is still there today, even though it debuted back in 1999. And Aerosmith continued to ride the Disney connection into the new millennium from, you know, Armageddon in 98, Rock and Roller Coaster coming online. Oh, and then we had 2002. I'm going to promote this as one of my favorite things ever, because I did enjoy this show and watched it pretty regularly back in 2002. But in 2002, Lizzie McGuire has an episode where Steven Tyler guest stars, and not only guest stars, but plays Santa Claus. The real Santa Claus is Steven Tyler, is what the episode, I think, is trying to tell us.
not to burst bubbles here, but I want my 25 minutes back.
Not a fan, I take it.
It could be because I didn't have the channels at that time. So when I was the target audience, I was not watching Lizzie McGuire. And now I'm a 36-year-old man trying to watch Lizzie McGuire.
Watching it without nostalgia.
And I'm going, you know, I'm closer in age to Steven Tyler, how he was at that time now, than
Hilary Duff. Even though
closer to Lizzie McGuire.
Right? So like Hilary Duff is you know, she's probably around our ages. If I could make that connection, she is about the same age as us. She's in that new Hulu show right now, the How I Met Your Father. Yeah. Too bad it couldn't be the Lizzie McGuire reboot, because I love Lizzie McGuire. I used to watch this and Even Stevens back on the Disney Channel, and then for a while I think they even showed them on the Saturday morning cartoon block. But good old I was probably a little too old for it at the time anyway, but it was fun. It was good, fun stuff, and I love Disney. And when Aerosmith popped, well, not just Aerosmith, but Steven Tyler of Aerosmith popped up on this episode, I remember thinking, like, whoa, this is crazy, because we're talking about, this is around the time that both of us were Aerosmith fans. Mm-hmm. And so I'm this Aerosmith fan who's watching this Disney Channel show, and he, like, pops up on there. And it was like, I remember thinking this is ridiculous. At the time, it's totally ridiculous. But he's Santa. She's building her float and no one will help her. And they do. I got to ask you this, because in the episode, Steven Tyler bookends it. He's at the beginning, he's at the end, and in the middle, there's this trying to find out, you know, the meaning of Christmas, but no one will help Lizzie McGuire make her float. But they do this one little rapid fire thing. I got to ask you, did you at least appreciate this? They do the rapid fire thing where they make so many Christmas movie references in like 2 minutes. It's like the Grinch, and there's some Christmas Carol in there, and there's some Charlie Brown Christmas in there.
I got that they were doing that, but... I can't say
I got that they were doing that.
I can't say that I really appreciate them just suddenly breaking out into Dr. Seuss rhymes and suddenly knowing the problem, how to fix a plumbing problem.
Right? She was the one. She was the one. She's just a plumbing prodigy.
The pipes are two sizes too small.
Right. Because the Grinch, you know. But no, so then Steven Tyler comes up at the end, and magically her float is finished and Santa's there, and Santa is Steven Tyler. I mean, I haven't seen Steven Tyler on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning. Not saying, just saying. But Steven Tyler's there, and he sings a stunning rendition of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. But the thing that I think is the most hilarious is Gordo, Lizzie's friend, says something along the lines of like, Santa's on your float, and he transformed himself into Aerosmith's Steven Tyler. they literally name drop him.
The whole setup to it too is absolutely ridiculous, where the kids are like, if you're Santa, prove it.
Okay, I will.
Oh, and then that's his proof, is that he gets up on a float as Steven Tyler.
some of those kids are his kids. Some of those kids are his kids who are in that scene. Because, of course, they got Steven Tyler and his kids have a long history of saying, I'll get you some work, and then you get me some work.
Yeah, how come Liv Tyler wasn't in this episode?
Right? So, So, no, she's not one of the kids in it. But I think there's a couple of his kids are among that group. I thought I recognized some standing out. So, yeah, that's Extreme Christmas, and that's season 2, episode 20. It's on Disney Plus to go watch it. I still have the nostalgia for it, so I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love it. Oh, it's also one of those rare episodes. There's only a few where Hayley Duff as well as Hilary Duff are both in it. She's in it as like one of the villainous other like kids their age with Kate, and I think she plays Kate's cousin or something like that. Who's like the, you know, Kate's like the villain in Lizzie McGuire. For those of you who aren't Lizzie McGuire aficionados or fans,
I will say I gotta love the name Knobby Frosty Bump for the elf. It's hilariously inappropriate.
How did that get by? How did that one get through?
Disney's just like, whatever, do your thing.
They weren't paying attention to Disney Channel at the time. They were just like, I don't know. They got Steven Tyler. He's doing the thing. It's cool. We'll just let him go with it. All right. So Aerosmith hasn't directly done a big thing with Disney since the Lizzie McGuire episode. That may be the most random ever, but I guess we could say they haven't done something of note since the Rock and Roller Coaster. But to this day, despite rumors saying that maybe someone would take over the Rock and Roller Coaster, it's still there. It's still rocking. Pun intended there. I don't know if that's a pun. That's just more like something Disney would have written in the copy of like the, you know, the ad for the thing. It's still there. It's still rocking after all these years. But They've had some little micro things throughout the years that happened since. And then I'm going to even go back in time and go to some things that we're going to retcon into Disney and pull back into Disney because they weren't Disney at the time, but they are now because of acquisitions, of course. So I'm going to go in and say there was the movie Miracle, The Miracle on Ice, the USA Olympic hockey movie, featured the song Dream On quite prominently in its soundtrack and ads and things like that. I remember it being on TV with that Dream On song. I feel like Dream On kind of took another boost around the time that movie came out. In 2011, Joe Perry went to Disney and they did a whole thing about him visiting on the Disney Parks blog and like took pictures of him in front of the Rock and Roller Coaster and all this stuff, which I think if you get a ride made after you, you probably get to go free for life as long as you let them write a story about it. So we got to get them to make rides about us so we can keep going back and do that. Another Joe Perry one that I got to mention is he is in a super group. I don't know. I am not familiar with their music so much. I'm aware of them, but he's in a super group called Hollywood Vampires with, I'm going to call him problematic Disney legend, Johnny Depp. Of course, he gets himself in trouble, but he still has that Disney legend title. And he and Joe Perry are in Hollywood Vampires. Have you ever heard any Hollywood Vampires? Or
I don't think I've heard any of their music. I have heard about the band and them being in together.
Right.
But, you know, vampires, Johnny Depp. I mean, that sounds about right.
Right.
He doesn't age. So I mean, you know.
Maybe he is. Yikes. Watch out for that one.
They need to get Keanu Reeves on there because he's a vampire too, you know.
You heard it, Hollywood Vampires. Keanu Reeves, have him join up. Okay. These ones go back in time. These are ones I'm pulling in that aren't really Disney-like. Well, they were not Disney when we first got them, but they are now. And the first one is in 1991, Aerosmith. I'm going to say starred in. They starred in the Simpsons episode Flaming Moe. They were a big part of it.
Oh, yes. I think that's honestly my favorite episode of The Simpsons.
It's a great one. It's got the Cheers like reference thing going on.
Yeah, I love that one. And you know, I know it's anti-Disney, but I did when I went to Universal Studios in Florida. I had to have a Flamin' Moe because...
Of course you did. And I'm going to tell you why that's not anti-Disney. This is the thing I love about Universal and The Simpsons and Marvel. I always say it because I'm not knocking Universal, but like, I always laugh that like, if you go to Universal and you buy some Simpsons merch, indirectly, there's a small portion of your cash that makes its way to Disney because they have to pay for the licensing on that. And who are they paying? They're paying Disney. So I wouldn't say that it's un-Disney of you. It's just that Universal model of like renting other people's or buying other people's IP.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Disney's kind of like, hey, you go over there, they're promoting our stuff. you come over here, that's all we do. So, but no, that is a great episode, Flame and Mo, and they're performing there at Mo's. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then actually, I didn't know about this one because I think I stopped watching The Simpsons regularly in the early 2000s. I don't know that I've seen too many of the more recent seasons. I've tried to go back and like watch seasons, but I tend to watch the ones I've seen already. But in 2011, there's an episode that features Joey Kramer as a character, and he plays himself. And I think he is like a love interest to Edna Krabappel, the teacher.
Oh.
So it's a whole thing. I haven't seen it yet. I got to go watch it. It's called Nedliest Catch, and it's from 2011. But I was like, that's so random that Aerosmith's drummer is like featured in an episode of like a 2011 episode. That's kind of random, but it's out there. Have to check that one out. And then this is the weirdest one, and I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'm hoping one day I'll be scrolling through, you know, social media and see Disney dropped some new stuff on Disney Plus, and they are going to drop The Incredible Human Machine from Nat Geo, because Steven Tyler is featured in this documentary getting surgery on his vocal cords. So it's a Nat Geo documentary, and you actually get to see them like doing an operation on Steven Tyler's vocal cords.
Because that's something I've always wanted.
I'm kind of interested. It's not there yet. Disney owns it. Put it out. If anyone from Disney is listening, which I doubt they are, put it out.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to see Steven Tyler's vocal cords cut open on camera. No.
I mean, I guess it would depend how bloody the video is.
Right? I don't know because it's Disney Plus.
It's National Geographic, so it's probably not super.
Right. You know. They do a tasteful job, which I think kind of like the stuff that I've watched Nat Geo on Disney Plus, I've enjoyed it all. It's been great content, and it's been stuff that you could watch with the whole family, which is very on brand with Disney. If you want to, like, you know, have your daughter be in your music video and then have her put you in as the soundtrack leader of her movie, it's all about the family. And Disney makes family entertainment. So I think that's how it all connects with the family connections there.
It's all about the family until Janie's got a gun.
Right? Then that's not,
and it's not, that's about not the family Disney. Anymore.
And that's not that kind of family. No. Not that kind of family entertainment. Without any more Aerosmith connections to Disney to talk about, I got to ask you, Andrew, to tell us a little bit about the Rare Cuts Media Society and what y'all do there. In full disclosure, I'm part of it too, but I want you to tell us.
So be sure to go check out Rare Cuts Media Society. We are a podcast that covers all sorts of different media projects, and we try to focus on ones that people really don't talk about anymore, or maybe never really talked about, because they're just rare gems hidden in the dirt. And we've got our newest episode right now is on the 1963 version of The Haunting. But we've also got another one coming up called on the movie Crime Wave by Sam Raimi, who, of course, directed the Spider-Man movies and is, with a Disney connection, doing the new Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah. Definitely.
So there's your Disney connection right there.
Nice.
So be sure to check us out at rarecutsmediasociety.com, and be sure to check us out on all the usual social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and give us a listen.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Andrew, for joining me for this conversation. I'll definitely have to have you back to talk about Disney, of course, but also something else that you enjoy along with it.
I look forward to it.
Thanks.
You can find me on Twitter at Eric H. Synergy. Visit synergylovescompany.com to subscribe and keep up with the show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.